Some people are content to be entertained by simple one-color electronics. Somehow these people have just never heard of Game Gear, the multicolor portable from Sega with tons of new titles. Yeah, some people are like that. But then some people like to eat pickled pork lips. System endorsed sold separately.
Hey, you.
It'll be this good. Thanks, Satan. Thanks, Satan.
Hello there, Sega fans, and good evening to all of those listening to us on Radio Sega. It's those Sega guys, back for more Sega chat of the company's heyday when all this were fields. Here to join me is my partner in crime. He's the shinobi to my Opa Opa. It's James. How you doing, mate?
Very well, thank you very much, mate. Back again, another episode. Great stuff to talk about. How's things yourself?
Very good, mate. I actually had my second jab today. So I'm all vaxxed up. If I start flaking, that might be why. It might be the 5G signal or the microchips that have been implanted on me. Keep tracking me.
It might be that Bill Gates decides to start tracking you with the nanomites that are in a vaccine. So,
I mean, if they're going to be tracking me, they're going to have a very boring time of it. Unless they enjoy a Sega chat. Which hopefully they do.
We're open to a new audience whenever we can get it, mate.
Oh, yeah.
So.
We might increase our listener count, get a few more people listening on Radio Sega. But I think we've got a brilliant episode lined up today for our listeners. So one that we've dubbed 30 Years of Gear.
And yeah, as a gaming podcast, honest, like if you... I've got 30 years of gear sitting here.
It's like that guy that I spoke to on holiday that had 3 heart attacks. But anyway, we digress. So 30 years ago, we are, of course, talking about the Sega Game Gear that turned 30 years old in the UK this year. Oh, these anniversaries are coming thick and fast, aren't they, mate? Sonic was 30. Oh, dear. Streets of Rage was 30 the other day.
They're coming thick and fast along with my wrinkles, mate. Honestly, it's like someone press the pause button on life, please. It's like the 30 years of Dreamcast is kind of creeping up on us as well, isn't it? It's kind of that'll be round the corner, no too distant future as well. It's just bloody mental just thinking all these decades are just flying past and we're, as you say, hitting anniversary after anniversary. Madness. But hey, we're still here to talk about it, so that's the main thing.
That's it, mate. So yeah, there's a bunch of anniversaries. There's like the Lemmings is 30 this year, isn't it? Outrun is 35. The Saturn's 27 this year. So where is that going? Link to the Past, I found out, was 30 this year. But you know, if anyone wants to listen to a retrospective on that, you're listening to the wrong show. But what we are going to talk about is the good old Sega Game Gear, which. We both experienced in its heyday, which will be great. So where to begin, I suppose? How did the Sega Game Gear become a thing? Well, it was obviously developed to rival the immense success of Nintendo's Game Boy at the time. It was dubbed Project Mercury. So anyone that's keeping track of these project names and obviously, you know, is well aware of the Sega Saturn that made its way out, should be aware of Sega's affinity for naming their consoles after planets. I mean, Mars was the 32X hybrid, wasn't it?
Yes, aye. That's right. Yep.
The Neptune... Oh, there's so many. I don't think we can even get into it. There's so many, but Project Mercury is one of the ones that actually made it out. So the idea was to base it entirely on Sega Master System hardware. They kept buttons 1 and 2, and they added a start button to it all. First unveiled it at the Tokyo Toy Show back in 1990. And one thing that I do love, mate, is how instrumental the Game Gear was to Tom Kalinske's, our good friend Tom, his journey into Sega. because that was the thing that he was shown when he went on that tour of the Sega offices.
He said to us, and he said, you know, in other kind of podcasts that we've kind of watched where he's been interviewed as well, and you know, the Game Gear was shown to him alongside the Genesis or the Mega Drive, obviously, as it was called in Japan, but and obviously in the UK as well. But he was blown away by it, you know, to see such colourful, detailed at that time graphics on a handheld. It blew his mind, and I think I kind of almost got the impression that I think Tom was a bit more impressed by Game Gear than Mega Drive.
Yeah, I got that same impression, because I feel like that was the thing. And I think he was kind of acutely aware at the time of the NES. It wasn't that long ago I read Console Wars, but I'm just trying to get the details back in my brain now. But I think he was aware. I think his kids had played a NES, but I think they definitely, one of them, I think, had a Game Boy, or they played a Game Boy. He knew of the Game Boy more. And when I think he was very impressed when he held this, you know, full color, very detailed piece of hardware in his hands. In the book, actually, I think he takes it to a bar where he goes after touring the offices with Nakayama's, and certain shows it to someone else in there. And I think it's at that point that he kind of thinks we're onto a winner now. So, yeah, tremendously important piece of hardware for Tom in particular, I would say.
No, definitely. I mean, Tom and Sega, you know, it was that kind of double whammy. Obviously, the Game Gear being more of a handheld master system, you know, as we've alluded to. But again, just whenever you went from looking at the Game Boy, and again, whenever we spoke to Tom, he mentioned the Game Boy on the interview we did, you know, and he kind of jokingly talked about it being like two colours or something like that. Whereas you were going to this, at that time, larger screen, full colour, the speed the games were running at, it was just probably felt so futuristic. Again, with Tom not being, it was in the television business and that kind of thing, but this all must have just been a complete quantum shift. And I think whenever Nakayama-san showed him those two products, that was probably, you know, obviously we all know how he was kind of hijacked on the beach in Hawaii and kind of, you know, headhunted to lead Sega, you know, in the US. But if you're a guy who's, you know, led products and launched successful products, if you've been taken over and secretly showing that technology, it must just have blew your mind. It really must have done. And it was instrumental in the direction that Sega took. It allowed Tom and his team to come in and really spearhead that battle against Nintendo. And as we've seen, the kind of irony is that Tom and his team's era, they're probably the most successful Sega brand, Sega arm, if you want to say, you know, they were at loggerheads with Japan for a lot of decisions, but you know, Sega's most successful period is the Mega Drive / Genesis. Obviously, Saturn is their best selling Japanese console, and it's lauded in Japan because it beat Nintendo with the N64 at the time. But if you're looking at Sega over its whole history, the Mega Drive is a golden era, and in the West, it was wildly successful, as opposed to in Japan where it wasn't. So Tom was and his team were instrumental to that, and the Game Gear was a massive part of that, along with the Mega Drive.
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, it's amazing when you think of, you know, what was around back in 1990, because the Mega Drive was kind of cutting edge. I know the PC Engine was pretty close in terms of power, but you know, it was the only true 16-bit console, and you had this handheld console, which was based on the Master System was still very much alive in parts of the world. So pretty incredible stuff, really. And when Tom had seen the Game Gear, it hadn't even been released. But it did launch in 1990, September 1990 in Japan. The free launch games were Columns, which I'm pretty sure everyone's played. And we'll talk about that probably a little bit later. Super Monaco GP, and a game called Pengo, which I'm not very familiar with. Not one I have heard of. About you?
Nope. I've seen it in the show notes, and I went, Pengo? I know of Pengu, but, you know. Super Monaco GP obviously speaks for itself, and as you said, Columns. Everybody's played Columns.
Yeah, it's one of those ones. If you buy a bundle of Game Gear games, you're guaranteed to have a copy of Columns in there. I've ended up with two myself somehow. it's like copies of Sega Rally. I don't know where they all come from. It actually released in the US in 1991, and the ad campaign was typical early 90s Sega attacking Nintendo, and it's ballsy and disrespectful, and I love it. So, I think there was complaints about the tribes, about the lack of colours, wasn't there?
No,
it's it compares Game Boy owners to a slobbering dog or something. It's like you can only see one in so many colours.
that Sega of America advertising was just so in your face and brilliant. Some of it tried to kind of come over here. I mean, I remember one print advert, I think they got complaints, was the one, was it a newspaper advertisement, and it was like about fiddling your joystick, and it was the hand top down over the joystick wiggling away, and the clear reference was to dirty things.
Yep.
And it got a load of complaints. But again, I kind of miss that. I like risky advertising. You know, it was... See if it raises a laugh and a smile, then it wasn't offensive. It was just somebody fiddling with a joystick.
The more you play with it, the harder it gets.
That's it. It's true. Moving on.
It's very clever. But that, I think that was Virgin that did those ads, because I think they were, at that point, they were in charge of the marketing and the everything, the distribution of all Sega consoles in Europe.
That was
Virgin Mastertronic that did that, who actually released the Game Gear in the UK. Obviously we got it last. We got it around about the summer of 1991, and this is why it's a little bit difficult to nail down a date for this, because obviously we're a UK podcast, so we've traditionally always celebrated the UK anniversaries, but getting the UK anniversary of the Game Gear has been a little bit difficult. I can't find any solid record of the date anywhere, so I thought, well, whenever we do it, as long as we do it this year, we're golden.
We're in the ballpark, mate, we're fine.
Yeah, as long as it's in, you know, the year ends in one, we're okay. It was very successful out the gate. Sales exceeded the expectations in the first 6 months, and obviously it launching in the summer of 1991, Sonic the Hedgehog came out very close to it. So that was, you know, Sega was struggling in Japan with the Mega Drive, weren't breaking down the doors quite with Mega Drive with the Genesis in the US, but then here comes Sonic the Hedgehog 1991 to give them that real kickstart, and wouldn't you know, the Sega Game Gear manages to come in at kind of just the right time as well.
I mean, having, again, like you're kind of looking at them kind of cashing in on the success of Sonic, like the craze of Sonic at that time, you know yourself, it was massive. And again, to be able to bring that portable version, and I know it wasn't the same as the Mega Drive version, but if you're a Master System owner, then you were basically getting the exact same version as you already had at home. You know, and we talked just now about like modern day Switch taking console quality, you know, gameplay on the go, the same as what's on your TV. And, you know, obviously you've had like PSP, which was kind of compared to being like a portable PlayStation 2, but not quite as powerful. But this was literally like for like almost with a Master System. So you were getting like a console quality experience. And again, to take Sonic, play it in your kip, and you know, take it to school, on the bus, on the train, with a battery pack clipped to your belt. You know, that was life, mate. That was living the dream.
It really was, mate. I mean, it really did feel like kind of almost modern console gaming in your pocket at that time, because the Game Boy, you know, it was monochrome. It was it had the ZX Spectrum processor. I think it had the old, I can't remember what the processor was called, but it's got more in common with the Spectrum than any other home console. Whereas the Game Gear was very much a Master System. So yeah, it sold well on the back of that Sega wave that it was riding. Actually ended up selling 11 million units. So it didn't quite catch the Game Boy, which sold something like, it's like 90 million or 100 million, isn't it? It's something ludicrous. That thing today about Nintendo selling 800 million consoles.
Bloody hell.
It's, I'm not sure if Sega broke 100 million. It's not the quantity that counts, it's the quality.
Exactly, mate. I'm just sticking with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's, yeah. Just looking at it now, mate, 118 million Game Boys.
I think the only one that I've owned, I had the Game Boy Advance SP in silver, which I barely touched. And I bought the original Nintendo DS on a complete and utter whim one lunchtime. And it just, nah. And I've never been able, and I'm not just saying that obviously because it's a Sega podcast and that and the preference for Sega, but Nintendo games, I try. Like, we've got the Switch and I sit down and what do I play on the Switch? Outrun, Sonic 1 and Sonic 2 and Virtua Racing. You know?
Street Fighter.
And Street Fighter 2 on the Capcom Arcade. And a wee bit of Final Fight. I don't play any Nintendo games on them, but I've never been drawn towards Nintendo games at all. Just, I don't know, Mario Kart, Zelda, Mario itself, just, no, doesn't tick the boxes for me, mate.
There was something on I heard, someone coined a phrase the other day, and it was raised by Sega, and it was on another podcast that I was listening to, and they said they were playing the Mega Drive Mini, and they were saying how much they really enjoyed revisiting those games and how they just clicked and felt right, and how they felt more right than anything that they've played in recent years. And this is because Sega has a very specific feel to it.
Yes.
Those games have a very specific feel. And if that feel clicks with you, then everything else kind of feels different and wrong. And that's I think that's definitely true for me. And I think it's true for you as well.
Yeah, that's a really, really good way of putting it. Oh, I like that.
Yeah, so I think it was when he said raised by Sega, he's like... Oh, and I think and that someone else on Twitter said the other day that when they were spoiled by Sonic, so when they went back to Mario, when they didn't even go back to Mario, when they experienced Mario for the first time, it's like, what is this? It's so slow. It feels it feels awkward. So I think it's probably true. The Game Gear still holds that special place for us. That's those of us that were raised by Sega, as it were. I think. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But yeah, only sold 11 million units. That's more than the Saturn, a little sad face for the Saturn there.
Oh.
More than the Dreamcast, obviously. More than the Wii U.
It's not difficult, is it? The Wii U fans have just left us one star reviews for that.
So. Yeah. I love the Wii U. I'm a massive Wii U fan. But I love the underdog, mate. I think part of that is I love the underdog. I enjoy PlayStation, but I can't root for them because they're always winning. I have to, you know, if Xbox started leading, I'd probably step away from them as well.
it's like watching Man City winning the title.
Yeah.
Everybody liked them whenever they were shite and they were playing in like the lower divisions and getting pumped, but now they're winning everything. People hate them, so there you go.
That's it, mate. Everyone loves an underdog, don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, it beat out all other handhelds as well. So I think aside from the PSP, it's the best-selling non-Nintendo handheld because it's beat the Lynx, the Wonder Swan, the N-Gage, the Neo Geo Color, the Neo Geo Pocket, and by some estimates, and this is where it gets a little bit unclear, but by some estimates, it's beat the PS Vita as well.
Well, the PS Vita, again, I've never owned one. I've had one shot of one, and I played Uncharted on it, and I played Wipeout on it, and I was impressed by it, but again, there was no real draw for me to buy one. I just didn't. I'd had the PSP and had fun with the PSP. But I just never felt compelled to pick up a Vita. It never appealed to me. There was never any kind of burning desire to buy one.
Yeah, I go through fits where I think, oh, maybe I'll get one. There was one on a Facebook Marketplace the other day for 40 quid. And I was like, oh, maybe.
Bloody hell, man.
Maybe. But then it's just the games. I think the game has become very much a collector. It's kind of like the Dreamcast in a way in that it's underperformed, and the games that are out there are pretty pricey because it's the same for the Dreamcast. The Dreamcast is, there's some, even trying to replace Dreamcast boxes, there's no really cheap games. Like if you need to replace an Xbox or a or a Mega Drive cartridge, or, you know, you get the little cheap games like your FIFAs or your Mega Drive, or, you know, those games are in abundance because there never was a FIFA on the Dreamcast. You know, those boxes are cheap, aren't cheap on the Dreamcast, and the Vitas, you know, the games in that are pretty expensive as well, even the most popular ones. So I don't think I want to jump down that rabbit hole.
you've just went from I might get one to talking yourself out of getting one in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's been the Vita to me since it was released. It looks nice, but I'll talk myself out of getting one. But on the Game Gear, I mean, it was, you know, it sold well, you know, not compared to the Game Boy, but compared to, you know, everything else, it's a pretty solid showing compared to what came after. A lot of that comes with, you know, as you were saying, it was well ahead of its time. The handheld specifications, I don't think they were exceeded until the Game Boy Advance, which came a full 10 years later in 2001.
Bloody hell.
Because I think it beat out the Lynx in, you know, in terms of power. The Game Boy Color was, you know, a very, very cheap upgrade, I think, if we're being very honest, because it was basically a Game Boy with a little more power and a limited color screen. WonderSwan, Neo Geo Pocket Color, again, they weren't as powerful. So Sega well ahead of the curve for that. And given how much they were asking for Game Gears, you know, RRP, you got a pretty good deal out of that.
Mm-hmm. 100%. You know, I do laugh when I see the N-Gage mentioned because I got one of them.
Oh, you did?
Oh, Jesus. What an absolute clusterfuck of a machine.
It had Tomb Raider on there, didn't it?
And
it
had, I had Tomb Raider for it. You try sitting in a bumpy bus changing a cartridge on an N-Gage and see how you get on. Dismantle the whole bloody thing just to change a game. Battery out the lot. No, hellish. You take a phone call and it looks like you've got a taco shell at the side of your head. No, sorry.
I didn't know you had to take the whole thing apart to change the cartridge.
Aye, you need to take the back off, take the battery out, and the cartridge is underneath the battery. Oh, and turn it back on again. And you could only put, obviously, one game in at a time. And there was... No. I mean, I got... Where did I get it? I got it for my Christmas. I'm sure I got it for Christmas one year. But I used to use it coming back from college. And I would always remember I used to listen to the Joe Wiley Show on the radio on it coming back. But just, no for me. No, it's not a handheld. It's a bastardized phone that tries to play crappy mobile games. Not for me. Didn't like it. Nope.
Well, there was, you know, they could have, you know, the amount of people that play games on phones now.
Well, I mean, Nokia were, I suppose, ahead of the curve in that they knew or they seen that gaming on phones would maybe be something somebody would go down or a route that maybe gaming would take, but maybe it was just too early and the form factor was wrong, but no, I just remember getting it and, oh, thanks, great, new phone, oh, it plays games. You have to do what to change them?
Oh, yeah, the form factor. The thing that always put me off was the screen was basically in portrait.
Yes.
Fuck that. Excuse my language.
Sorry, this is going to be on Radio Sega at 6 o'clock. It's about 6:30 or something round about that as well.
maybe put a Sonic Spring sound over the top of it. Aye. Or something.
I mean, I've had a couple myself, so sorry, Viper, we'll get that sorted.
But yeah, it's... Yeah, it never appealed to me. It's just, there's a reason why Nokia no longer exists because they were in that position and they really could have capitalized on it and they cocked it up completely.
They did.
But yeah, we don't fondly remember no one fondly remembers the N-Gage, but the Game Gear is still fondly remembered. Obviously, we had the Game Gear Micro announced, you know, as much as people like to poke fun at that little announcement. I think it does show that there was an awful lot of respect and admiration for the machine over in Japan.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. I mean, they were nice little nods to the original, you know, and the fact that they were, I think they're smaller than a VMU, than a Dreamcast VMU, which is crazy. But I think if you're a Sega collector, especially, again, maybe harking back to what we spoke about when we were talking about imports, it's one of those things that, you know, are a rare thing, along with the arcade, the Astro City Mini. You know, there's a couple of wee things over in Japan that maybe you can't get over here and that won't come out over here. And the Game Gear Micros are definitely up there. They're cute and they're quirky. Different colours with different games preloaded on each of them. Could I play them with these stumpy digits of mine? Probably not. I'd still rather play an original. But no, I think they were a very nice nod to Sega's past. And again, just nice multicolours, different games on each of them. Don't know what the price was like for them and if they were a limited run and what they go for now. Not something I would look to pick up, but I'm pretty sure that collectors have lapped them up.
Yeah, I think they were very much a collector's item because they weren't too expensive. I think that if you could buy the whole set for something like $200 or something.
Right, okay.
Get all four. So, but yeah, I imagine people have snapped them all up now. Lovely, lovely little, you know, nice little, cute little items. I think there was the giant magnifying glass that you could attach to them because the screen was so small. The buttons were very small, but a very much a novelty item. I would have liked to see a, you know, maybe a half full size Game Gear size Game Gear Micro come out with all of the games on them on one item, but
like a PSP sized Game Gear,
or original Game Boy Advance size. Mm. See, this is the thing about the Game Gear is I think the form factor is perfect. I've owned Game Boys. I've owned a few of them, and my favorite is the Game Boy Advance, the original version. I've got an SP because of the backlit screen, but holding the device at the bottom felt like I sometimes feel like my hands are cramping. We're holding it on either side, and I think the Game Gear and the Lynx came out about the same time, but they both went for that approach where the buttons and the D-pad are at the side. And, you know, that obviously still persists today with the Switch, the Vita, and I think that's, Sega setting the way again.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, the Switch, my hands get sore playing the Switch. I think it's the fact that the way the sticks, the analog sticks positions on, it just doesn't, it makes my hands just kind of cramp up a wee bit. I just kind of, it's the light we've got. And obviously the Joy-Con layout's the same, regardless of being the light or the big one. But just after maybe like 20, 25 minutes, it just starts to feel quite uncomfortable.
I've got that. It depends what game I'm playing. Mm-hmm. I think it's when I have to use the bumpers and the triggers more. The more I use them, because it's very slim, the Switch. And I think it's...
That might have something to do with it.
Yeah, I think that's where I struggle. Whereas the Game Gear is a nice, big, chunky fella, isn't it?
Aye.
And all you need is three buttons. What do you need? What do you need? Two extra sticks and all these extra buttons and shoulder buttons and bumpers and all that for? You just give us two buttons and a start and let we'll be on our way. Oh, dear. Well, what made it great was you got the full colour screen. It actually was capable of more colours than the Mega Drive. It couldn't display more simultaneously, but it could do. It had more colours than the colour palette. So I think if anyone ever used it to its full extent, I'm not sure where of many games that do, but I think that games could possibly look less vivid than the Mega Drive.
Jeez, oh.
So, yeah, as we were saying, mate, very impressive piece of kit.
Mm-hmm.
Capable of backwards compatibility with the Sega Master System. You had the old Master Gear converter where
that's right, yeah,
plug something in the back and you can stick your chunky, by comparison, Master System carts in there. Something that I still want to get for mine, actually. I've never seen one in the flesh, have you?
No. I'd seen one on a shelf, but I've never actually held the physical product or used it. But I know of it. But I've seen the box on a shelf many, many, many years ago, but never used one or held one.
No, I think you're right there, because I think I saw one on a shelf at an airport when we were going away, when we were very young. And my sister said, I think my sister always asked for one, and I was like, well, we got a Master System at home. What do you want that for? Now, I wouldn't mind having one. I'd love to have one. I don't get much of a chance to use my Master System carts because my Master System is packed away. So, you know, plug the Game Gear in, stick the Master System converter in, and play some Master System on the Game Gear before bed. That's the life. the TV tuner, mate, which I think, I never used one of those, but you did.
Oh,
we'll get onto your memories.
I've got a story about the TV tuner, all right, we'll get to that.
Yeah, but that's just, that's superb, the fact that it could actually put TV on that tiny little screen.
And it looked great. Like, yeah. it really did. I mean, I know obviously at that time you did. I mean, there was a quite thriving market for the kind of wee mini portable TVs. You know, they looked like big, bulky, giant kind of like almost mobile phones, but they were, you know, the screen was in the top half. They were kind of like original Game Boy kind of orientation. And you had your kind of controls and your speaker on the bottom and a screen at the top. Obviously, Game Gear put that into a kind of landscape model and built it into the games console with the TV tuner plugged in the back. It just turned it into a portable telly. Honestly, the picture was bloody good on it.
Yeah, so I heard. I heard it was excellent. It's just a shame. I'm gutted that they no longer work because of digital signals.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty much, again, only, I think they're only really valuable to collectors who want to just have it as part of the peripheral set.
But I've seen people do some interesting things with them because it actually has an auxiliary in. So there was people playing PC games. I think it was Nostalgia Nerd on his channel. He says, can you play Windows games on a Game Gear? And obviously he doesn't really play Windows games on a Game Gear. He plays a Windows game on his PC, which is connected to various cables, which ultimately ends up in this aux cable that goes into his Game Gear. So he's got something like... get something like Resident Evil 2 Remake playing on the Game Gear screen or something like that. which is bonkers. But it's a shame that you can't actually use it natively as a TV tuner now. I'd give it to the missus and say, watch Love Island on that and leave me alone.
I don't think I'd subject a Game Gear to having Love Island put on it, mate. I'll be honest with you. I just...
It'd probably blow its own capacitors.
It would literally just destroy itself rather than have that crap put on it. I refuse to show this.
Yeah. I didn't live 30 years to be subject to
that. Even a Game Gear would look and go, what is this?
Yeah. It's
like... Any Love Island fans listening? Sorry.
Yeah, sorry,
I don't expect it to be. Aye.
Obviously, the final point I've got in here about what makes it great is just some excellent games. And I think we'll go through our favourite ones later in the episode. Not the perfect device, it must be said. I mean, the main criticism is pretty infamous by now, wouldn't you say?
Aye, batteries.
Yep. That's all there is.
It's if you didn't have a rechargeable supply of batteries. I mean, I remember again before I got the battery belt. Right, I had I've got battery chargers, Duracell ones for my Xbox. Right, and I've got like a pack of 8 Energizer rechargeables, and this tiny little black plug. It's no bigger than like the socket itself, and it's got like doubled up layered sections to put in like four batteries at the back and four in front of them and charge up. But back then this thing was like a miniature shoebox. It was white with a clear lid that you flipped up and you had to ka-chunk, ka-chunk, click each battery in. It was this big loud clunk as you put them in, and took ages to charge them, which then led to the getting the rechargeable mains battery pack, which you could charge up from the mains and then put it into your Game Gear's power socket and then clip that bad boy on your belt and head out the door like David Hasselhoff.
See, my sister had a battery pack it was one of the group ones. And I remember I was reading, I had my old, I think I mentioned before, I've been going through some of my old like magazines and comics lately, and there was an advert for the Sega, there was a news article and an advert for the Sega battery pack. It was like, it was something like, it must have been in the news article, because it wasn't the advert, because it was saying how charge for only 8 hours to get 2 hours playtime, a massive 2 hours playtime or something like that.
You didn't get much.
Yeah, I remember it, yeah, my sister's one didn't last long either. But yeah, that one, she eventually left it charging overnight and the battery pack actually melted.
Jesus. I mean, yep. I do still enjoy the fact that I got a genuine laugh out of Tom Kalinske whenever I did say to him, "You and I have lived that dream, Tom. We've had that Game Gear battery pack clipped on our belt." And he actually laughed out loud. And so, you know, it's nothing quite beat it. You literally did walk about thinking you were like the cool guy. I remember getting on that number 62 bus with my Game Gear in the summer. Like, 75 single, please, driver. Ka-ching. Look at me, boys and girls. I've got my Game Gear. I don't need all these batteries. I don't need six or eight batteries, whatever it was, three in each side. I've got my battery pack. Oh, crap. You'd be lucky to make the return journey, mate, with any power in it. You know, it was like, oh, it just looked like a big grey dildo basically strapped to your leg. You know, it's just a big, stupid, long, grey piece of plastic with a big green light in the top of it. It's like you've maybe, I don't know, just, it was quite an unsightly looking thing. But again, people moan about iPhone batteries, mate. Honestly.
But I don't know, mate. It kind of, you look at it now and it was garish, but also it's also kind of cool.
I mean, that's what I say. You thought you were the bollocks whenever you were, you know. It just, like, I don't need to, all these kind of criticisms that you had. Like, we all had people at school who owned like a Game Boy and thought they were like the bee's knees because they had the best selling. You know, some things never change. That's just the way some people are today as well. But they've got Game Boy, and I've got Robocop on my Game Boy, and I've got Super Mario. What have you got? I've got Sonic 2. And I don't need to worry about batteries, mate, because see that bad boy strapped to my belt? That's a rechargeable battery pack.
I think, I mean, it's quite hard to, I mean, if any of our listeners want to know what this thing looks like, I mean, go into a Google image search and type in Game Gear battery pack. Maybe type in the belt as well, but Game Gear battery pack. But you said it looks like a dildo. It's a weird shaped thing, isn't it? It kind of looks like an electric shaver without the blades at the top, or it looks like a really long thin mouse, like computer mouse. It's very odd.
I'm just looking at a picture. It's a big unsightly grey chunk of plastic. Oh, look, that's right. The LED for the charge and then on off, and then this big cable coming out the top of it. But I mean, yeah. Is that your power socket? Game Gear battery pack.
Yeah, but it's got the curves in the right places, mate. And look at that, Game Gear in green, Sega on there in black. Come on, as 90s as you can get.
Oh, that is, mate, honestly. It's just, I like the fact as well that, if I remember, was at the bottom left corner, it had a power inlet as well. So you could charge it as you played.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh dear, just brilliant stuff. I might have to get one just for the nostalgic value. I mean, it won't hold a charge now, absolutely no chance.
No, mate, you look at battery technology as good as it is today, man. You can't use an iPhone for a year without it losing 25% of its capacity. You know, you look at the battery health in your iPhone after a year, and it's like, your battery health is 85%. It's like, all right. There's no chances a Game Gear battery pack is going to hold any charge for any length of time anyway. You might get 5 minutes of it. But again, it's probably something that people would, if they're a collector, they just want all the peripherals there for kind of nostalgia and just to collect it, basically, just to kind of have everything on there that... I'm sure I had a big magnifier thing as well for mine. In fact, I did. It was grey, and it clipped on the front, and it was really hard plastic. And it was, I think, the top part was kind of like, like kind of ridges on it, and then you clipped it up, and then either side there was these kind of angled grey bits, and you folded them left and right and pulled them out, and then the grey bit you flicked up at the start had two slots, and then they clipped onto the kind of grey. That was like a kind of sun shield kind of thing that I had for it. In fact, that's what it was. I'm sure there was a magnifier I had as well. It was unsightly, but that was it. No, in fact, hold on a minute. I'd tell a lie, sorry. That screen guard was for the Lynx I'm talking about there, because I had a Lynx too. And we'll get to why I had a Lynx too very shortly. But no, I had a magnifier for the Game Gear. The sun shield thing that I described there was for the Lynx. But
I can't remember if my sister had one, but again, I might be getting confused with the Game Boy. But I mean, that was that flags another of the small negatives for it was the resolution, because although it was as powerful as a Sega Master System, it didn't display the same resolution, which not the end of the world. Made some games like Sonic the Hedgehog is a little bit more cramped when you're playing it on the Game Gear compared to the Master System. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is it's Game Gear throwingly frustrating. I mean, Green Hill Zone Act 3, if anyone's ever got there, you know how frustrating it is, because it's like there's so many leaps of faith that it's you basically have to know through muscle memory where you have to go.
Aye.
Even getting through the first boss is a pain because you can't see where the bouncing balls are. Which is what gave me the ump the other day. I talk about getting into rage about games a lot, don't I?
I mean, the older games tend to do that, though, don't they? Because that's just the difficulty levels that you're dealing with. Proper challenge.
Yeah. Other criticisms were the size, but, you know, as I said already, I was a fan of the size. What did you think?
Sorry? Told you to leave that for off air, mate.
Oh, God. There we go.
And that's without a cider. Oh, brilliant. No, the size of the Game Gear never bothered me. I mean, as I said, it wasn't as chunky as the Atari Lynx 2. The Atari Lynx 2 was just ridiculously kind of clunky. The Game Gear felt a lot more kind of streamlined compared to that. So, I think, again, it all comes from the fact that the Game Boy was very compact, you know, but you just said to yourself, you know, it was like a Spectrum processor. It was a two-tone monochrome screen. You know, you could put two batteries in, it would last a fortnight.
Yeah. That much smaller, though. I didn't think the Game Boy, the original version, still quite a bit of heft to it.
Is it? I mean, I've not seen one in God knows how long. I couldn't even tell you the last. It was a boy I went to school with, boy Gary. I used to remember in primary school, and he had a Game Boy, and I always remember the reason why. I kind of looked at it, went over and had a wee look at what he was playing, because he brought it to school and he had RoboCop. Which was pretty much the Spectrum version.
They're all based on that arcade game.
Yeah, it was great, you know. But again, I've not seen an actual original Game Boy in the flesh for more than 30 years.
It's been a long time for me. I've seen them at conventions and gaming markets and stuff, but it's one of these things where I kind of want to get hold of one because I knew so many people that had one. But I wouldn't mind getting hold of one just for nostalgia reasons, because I do have Game Boy games, because I did have a Game Boy Pocket and a Game Boy Color. I haven't held one for ages. I'd like to. It's weird. I don't have any nostalgia for the NES, but I do have a bit for the SNES and Game Boy, because I knew people that had them back in the day. But, you know, from the Game Boy wasn't that much smaller than the Game Gear, I don't think. Neither fits in your pocket. Kind of in a similar way that the Switch doesn't really sit in your pocket either.
No.
But and there was the criticism that the Game Gear's library was smaller than the Game Boy's, but there was plenty to play on it, mate, wasn't there?
Oh, Christ, aye. Again, some of the kind of big hitters from the Master System and the industry as a whole at that time were on there, you know. And we're going to go into our top games later on, but you know, there was Amiga stalwarts on there, games like Lemmings, you know, Streets of Rage made its way across as well, albeit, again, Master System ports. But we'll go on to games whenever we'd start to discuss our top five that we've picked each, but there was no shortage of quality software on the Game Gear, not at all.
Absolutely, mate. So, what were your earliest memories of a Game Gear, of your Game Gear? So, it was your first Sega console, wasn't it? Because
yeah.
You were obviously, you wanted that Mega Drive, you wanted it so much, and everyone should know the story by now that you got the Atari ST. So, you
an Atari, an Atari 1040 STE. Hello.
I stand corrected.
Things etched in my brain.
So you set your sights on the Game Gear.
Yeah, well, again, in Glasgow City Centre, on the bus route in, before you got to Central Station Bridge, what is now the Sir John Moore's pub, there was a raised kind of, not so much like a precinct off of the main street, but at the end of the road there was a Tandy shop. And it was one of the kind of places that, again, my uncle would take me into on that kind of, you know, Saturday joint into the town. And in the months leading up to that Christmas period, and it would be either Christmas 91. What year did Batman Returns come out?
Batman Returns would have been 91.
Right, so because the Lynx was bundled, the Lynx 2 was bundled with the Batman Returns game as a pack, but in this Tandy store, there was like a stand, and it was a handheld, and it had all three of them. So you had the Game Boy, the Game Gear, and the Atari Lynx 2, and you could play what game was running on them. Obviously, playing like Sonic on Game Gear. Game Boy didn't even look at it, couldn't tell what was running on it. And the various times that I went in to Tandy and looked at the Atari Lynx 2, was Gates of Zendikon, and the California Games was running, and the other one was it Blue Lightning, the kind of Afterburner ripoff.
I don't remember Blue Lightning, but I know the other two. I think, yeah. I did play the California Games port, and I think that was actually very, very good.
It was, I've got to give it to Stu. It actually was good. But every week going in, at that point, you start to read the signs. You know yourself whenever you were a kid and you knew that the whole kind of Santa Claus thing wasn't any kids listening. Right. Don't even know if I will be, but just in case. Right? Do I kill somebody's Christmas? The Sega guys stole Christmas. But basically, you were getting the vibes that you were getting sounded out for a Christmas gift, right? And I made it abundantly clear, right? Having been down this path before, that you know, the preference was the Game Gear. Sonic, it's amazing. Screen looks great. Oh, it sounds brilliant. What do you think of the Lynx? It's all right. So I'd set my stall out. I'd made it abundantly clear that I preferred the Game Gear. Right.
Yep.
And I mean, kind of looking at time frames, it might have been a year later. I don't know if it was a year later, because I can't mind when my mum sold the Spectrum and all my games and I got the ST. The actual specific years are quite fuzzy, but time frame was obviously I'd wanted that Mega Drive, sold my Spectrum, my games, had an Atari ST, was getting sounded out about these handhelds, and I made it abundantly clear, I want the Game Gear. Don't get me a Lynx, it's all right, it's no bad. Cut to Christmas, sitting there, and I get handed this box. I go up to my uncle's, and I'm sitting there, and I get handed this box, and it was like the main present. It was held over to the end, and I get handed this, and puts my rips of paper, and all I can see is Michael Keaton staring back at me for this box. And the minute I seen Batman, I'm like, oh, it's a Lynx. And I always remember, I think my uncle was quite disappointed with my reaction, because he actually went in a wee bit of a mood, I remember, that Christmas, because he went, did you know you were getting it or something? And I was like, well, I knew I was getting something, but I didn't think it was going to be this. Ungrateful child! Like, Look, mate, you've had the fucking warning. You've played this record before, mate. I didn't want an Atari, I wanted a Sega. <It's> like...
This is not the Atari Guys podcast.
No, it is not. And I think if maybe my family had had their way, maybe I wouldn't have got that. I mean, the lesson was finally learned when later on I would get taken to the arcade and play Sega games, and then the Saturn finally came into my life. But Atari screwed me over twice.
Mate, you were so close to 1996 getting a Jag instead of a Saturn.
Mate, I wouldn't be surprised, right? Honestly, it's like... And I'd have been close to picking up a sledgehammer in the process, mate, I'm telling you. It's... It's no once, twice, three times a lady, I'm telling you. It was just, there was no chance. No three times I was getting put through that. So, no. No. That was my initial flauntings with the Game Gear.
I mean, the Lynx is a capable machine, actually.
I just, the games were crap.
That's the thing. It just didn't have the library. I mean, it could do some really great things with sprite scaling and rotation that nothing on the market could do then. But yeah,
I mean, barely stole or quit Atari off the back of that. I'm pretty sure I read is that it was quite, you know, annoyed with the fact that, again, Atari had put out great hardware but didn't support it with any kind of decent software. And, you know, Blue Lightning was decent. You had Gates of Zendikon, Rygar. I mean, Batman Returns was okay. We also have Gauntlet, where you had to put it in, you know, portrait orientation to play it. As a system, it was very friendly in terms of, you know, being for left-handed players. It had the option to flip the screen if you were left-handed. Didn't affect me because I'm not, but that's why it's got the A and B buttons on the top and the bottom part of the right-handed section.
Always thought that was really cool.
Aye. So, I mean, they tried to... I mean, it is a very capable piece of kit, but just the games were just... There was no big franchises on it. It was just Atari games and... Like Batman.
Yeah. I mean, Batman Returns on the Game Gear is fantastic.
I mean, well, I had Toki as well for the I'm sure Toki for the Lynx.
Go 8-bit.
And that wasn't bad. Again, I mean,
I've heard that's a good port.
Aye, it's a pretty decent port. But I mean, did they want an Atari, mate?
Oh, but you did get a Game Gear in the end, though, didn't you?
Yeah, well, again, much like with the Saturn, my uncle, like, he got me the crap and then bought the good stuff himself, and then eventually I got the good stuff. But maybe a couple of years down the line, can we kind of let, maybe like 93, I think he got his, tail end of 93 it would have been, he got one. And obviously, a lot of the library was quite cheap. And I've mentioned on the podcast before about what everyone wants. You know, that it was a shop in Clyde Bank, and they had an upstairs games department. And it was like you were picking up games for like 5-6 quid. They were dirt cheap. I got my own shortly after. I think he got his maybe like kind of towards maybe after the middle of 93. And then I got one for like the Christmas 93. And then obviously what followed in terms of the TV tuner, again, he picked up all the kind of peripherals. And if you wish for me to tell the TV tuner story now, I can do so.
Yeah, go ahead, mate. I think right here we're just going to discuss our memories, so just crack on.
Right, so TV tuner, I watched the World Cup 1994 final on a Sega Game Gear.
That's one of the few finals that I remember vividly.
I watched Roberto Baggio sky that penalty on a Game Gear. Honestly, mate, that was surreal. Can't remember why it ended up. It was staying over us. Was I staying over at my uncle's or something one night? And I don't know if he was watching telly and my gran was watching telly or whatever, but I ended up, I plugged the TV tuner in and I watched the US 94 World Cup final on a Sega Game Gear.
The best way to watch it, mate. I mean, I was watching it on a normal telly, but I do remember Baggio Sky in it so vividly. I was cheering Brazil though in that final.
Well, I mean, because at that time I was a big Italian football fan and obviously watched Gazzetta every Saturday, and it was, here we go, kind of, it's not a football podcast, but it was quite cruel because Baggio had kind of dragged Italy to that final. I thought it was really cruel that he was the one that missed the penalty, because that Italy team really had no right to get there, and he dragged them there kicking and screaming, and then it was quite cruel that he was the one to miss that penalty. So
they lost to Ireland in the group stages.
That's right. I Ree Houghton.
Yeah.
Well, one of a guy I used to know, it's his uncle.
Oh, is it?
Uncle Ree. there you go.
Yeah, I remember that group, mental, finishing on 4 points. My little brain couldn't comprehend it when I was only, 10 at the time.
Do you all go? Do you all go through then?
What's GD?
What's the goal difference?
Oh, but brilliant stuff, mate. Yeah, glad that you got one in the end. I mean, it's interesting that the games were, you know, fairly cheap in 93-94, because the Game Gear did have a bit of a tail to it. It did live on for a little while. We're into 96. It overlapped with the Sega Saturn as well.
Mm-hmm. Aye. I mean, as I say, look, games I remember getting dirt cheap. Alien 3, The Terminator, Wolf Child was one that was on there. Prince of Persia, Kickoff, I'm sure I remember I had. Mortal Kombat. Robocop versus Terminator. What else did I have?
I mean, they're all bloody superb, though, aren't they?
Oh, but I mean, they were all like dirt cheap. Like, these were like £5-6.
You know? I mean, how anyone can criticise that library? That's just every one of those is actually a decent game.
Aye.
Some of the movie licenses, as I mentioned, Batman Returns is brilliant on there. I've only got acquainted with it recently, but it's an absolutely superb license. Much better than the Mega Drive one, which is pretty. The Mega Drive Batman Returns. I mean, the Mega Drive Batman Michael Keaton adaptation is brilliant, but Returns is pretty poor in the Mega Drive. But the Game Gear one's actually made by with the soundtracks by Yuzo Koshiro, Streets of Rage. It's pretty very very nice. Cool, mate. But that Game Gear, you're no longer with it, unfortunately.
No, because here we go. Why do you make me relive these painful memories, Dan?
This is, it's like Dear Deirdre, but podcast form, mate.
Aye,
Dear Dan Driver.
Dear Dan, I sold my Sega Game Gear for parts for £15 on eBay. Yep, you heard that right. My Game Gear developed an issue where it would have big black lines going down the screen vertically. Sound worked, it powered on, controls appeared to work, start button would start games, could hear things kind of start and then menus being accessed, but I just basically, at that time, when kind of my retro bug hadn't kind of kicked in, and I sold it for parts for £15, and all I had to do was pay £25-30 to get it recapped, and it would have worked. And what makes it even worse, mate, is that my TV tuner was also in. I had it was a carry case, so the TV tuner was in there, and I sold that. Again, I must have only sold that. I put it on as a buy it now for a tenner. I don't even want to look at what they were worth. I just put it on.
They're not really worth, I don't think they're worth too much, actually.
Right, TV, that's all right. Thank you, mate. You've kind of softened the blow a bit there. But £15 for parts. It literally sold within 15 minutes, and now I know why. Because somebody's probably bought it, fixed it, and sold it for like £100 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Painful.
I didn't pay too much for mine in the end. I mean, I didn't own any. I didn't actually own a Lynx in its heyday. So I only got my did I say Lynx? Whoops. God, it really is turning into the Atari guys, isn't it?
Welcome to the Atari guys podcast.
Oh dear, I've never even owned a Lynx. Played one, never owned one. Do you know what, mate, I've never owned an Atari system, full stop.
You're lucky, mate.
it must make me some sort of retro heretic. I've never owned anything of it. I mean, anyway, we digress. I only got my Sega Game Gear last year, actually. So I haven't had my own one long, but I played it a lot because my sister got one, and I think she must have got hers Christmas 1993, or at least maybe for her birthday. No, it's definitely Christmas. So my brother got his Master System 91, got the Mega Drive for the three of us as a combined present in 92. And then I think she got the Game Gear Christmas 93, which I think probably ties in because I think that's when they cut the price on them a little bit. And she got Sonic the Hedgehog, obviously, Chuck Rock, Columns, and Strider 2. And yeah, I used to borrow it an awful lot when she'd let me, but she was pretty protective of it. I was saying before we started to hit the record button on here, she was accusing me of stealing her Game Gear when she came to visit recently.
The fire still burns. She still wants that Game Gear.
Yeah, her and my wife was downstairs watching something. I'm pretty sure it was Love Island. It was something that I wasn't remotely interested in.
There's two mentions for Love Island on this podcast, and they shall be the last.
It shall be the last. Whatever it was they were watching, I was like, well, I'm not watching this. So I came downstairs with my Game Gear and my AC adapter and plugged it in and started playing Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which I started swearing at when I couldn't, kept dying on the first boss. And that's when she turned around to me and went, did you steal my Game Gear? I was like, no, I got my own one. I did ask her quite a few times where hers was because I was looking to borrow it / steal it, but hers has been lost to the wind. I think she lost it in a breakup or something. But yeah, I used to play hers a lot. She, as I mentioned, she had the battery pack on her. She actually had the one with the grips, the Gamester one, and that used to plug into the actual battery ports. Yeah, left it on overnight and it melted, but it still worked. Because I used to, I think I mentioned it in the imports episode, didn't I? That I used to have an ex-girlfriend up in Birmingham, which was, I don't know what I was thinking then. It was a 2-hour long commute every time I wanted to visit. when I wasn't driving, when I was 16, 17, I'd read books on there, but quite a few times I took my sister's Game Gear up there. That must have been 2001 or something. And I was playing, I'd had Game Boys and everything by then, but I'd still take the Game Gear, still had that fondness for it. So that, you know, I'd do my batteries in the there and back again journey. yeah, loved it back then. But yeah, I ended up getting a recapped one last year. Didn't pay too much for it. I think I got it for about 40, 50 quid with a handful of games. It was sold as refurbished. Had a few issues with it, mainly to do with button responses, but that is literally just strip the whole thing down, clean all the contacts with isopropyl, just give it a proper clean, and it works right as rain now. But maybe one day, mate, you'll get a replacement yourself.
Well, I've just been on eBay there, having a look about, and if you can get them kind of recapped for about 50, 60 quid. But there's someone doing refurbished with capacitors with an LCD screen for 130.
130? That's not bad, because I was going to mention the modding scene around it is pretty is pretty big at the moment. But there's the Mook Wheel mod, which I think is like double the screen resolution, super bright. But I think those ones go for silly money.
That's why the thing says not Mick Will. Okay, that makes sense. Right, okay. That makes sense. Thank you. Just kind of, what's Mick Will?
Yeah, it's just the guy. I think that's just the guy that created the mod that created the screen. Right. There's one on here now, yeah. Sega Game Gear upgraded with USB-C rechargeable LiPo battery Mook Wheel mod. Only £230.
No. You can get a Series S for another 20 quid.
Yeah, you get the new Nintendo Switch. Oh, come on, then. Neither of them are a Game Gear, though, are they? Come on,
I know. I'd never get that past the wife, mate.
No, neither would I. I'm stuck with what I got for now.
At least you've no soldiers for 15 quid for parts, mate. So
this is true. There are alternatives, though. There was the Game Gear mini console, the App Games one. Did you ever see that?
No, did not. No.
So it's kind of similar to the Mega Drive ones. I think it's a little bit better than those, because obviously they have terrible sound. That one that I that I got in a bundle, where I played Streets of Rage 2 from, it sounded like the soundtrack was trying to be like Transylvania-y or something. It's I think they look fairly smart. I mean, they look a bit plasticky and clicky, but I think you can get those fairly cheap now.
Mate, I'm looking at it. It looks like an N-Gage.
Yeah.
it's literally got that crappy grey textured look.
Oh, yeah, it's got that. It looks very cheap.
Aye. No. Much is that? 40 quid?
30?
It's like £39.99. No chance. You get a Game Gear for another 20 quid.
Yeah. Get the real deal.
Sonic 2 for £4 plus £2 postage. Chuck Rock, 7 quid plus 150 postage. Look at this, we're recording, sitting looking through eBay.
Yeah, we're going to end up spending money while recording this.
I know, I better know. My wife's away visiting the family, mate, so if I... What's this, 130 quid on the bank statement?
Yeah, you got all the boxes, mate. It's the perfect crime. Just just fold those boxes into those boxes. Oh, yeah. But yeah, absolutely love it, mate. So, should we do our top five games?
Yes, let's.
Yeah, so do you want to go first? Or?
Yes, okay. So, I shall just start off.
Were you going 5-1 or 1-5?
I've not put them in any order of preference. I've just picked five games that I think the ones that I played a lot of at the time and that kind of stick out in my memory from having it. So, first is Sonic 1. My first experience with Sonic at all, as I mentioned on the podcast before. So it's the Master System version. It is what it is. But when at that age you hadn't, you know, got the Mega Drive and didn't play the actual full blown Sonic, it was an experience of sorts with the character. So it was great, a cute wee version. Cracking wee soundtrack as well on there. So great fun. Loved the first Sonic game. Second one I've picked is Mortal Kombat 2.
I've heard that's a fantastic port. I've not played it on the Game Gear myself, but I hear so many people lauding it, how good it is for the hardware.
Yeah, for what it's running on, it's ridiculous. I mean, Mortal Kombat 1 was a decent port. If I remember, there was only two backgrounds on Mortal Kombat 1. I'm pretty sure it was Goro's stage, and it might have been the bridge.
Oh, I think you're right, actually, because I think what the Mortal Kombat 1 port is based on, or was developed very closely to, is the Game Boy version.
Right, aye.
And that one, you know, it doesn't matter too much what's in the background because there's no bloody colour to it anyway.
Aye.
It's a bit more noticeable in the Game Gear.
Yeah. No, but I mean, Mortal Kombat 2, and I had a look at it as well on YouTube before, and it's still it's ridiculous. It's such a bloody good port, really playable. Had a lot of fun with that one. RoboCop versus the Terminator is my number three or my third pick that I've chosen. Again, cracking soundtrack, really, really good version. Having since played the Mega Drive version after getting the Everdrive, again, looking at kind of YouTube and my memories and things like that as well, pretty close in terms of recreating that aesthetic and the feel of kind of the gore aspect and whatnot, capturing that atmosphere of that game, does a great job considering how scaled down it is. Another one is Desert Strike.
Again, yeah, another great port.
Brilliant, you know, great fun, captures all of the atmosphere, all the kind of gameplay mechanics of the Mega Drive game, and obviously the Amiga version as well. Great fun with that. Loved that port. It was another one from What Everyone Wants, about 5 quid or something I paid for that. And another final one I've got here is Wolfchild.
Yeah, that's a nice left of field choice.
Yeah, again, an Amiga, Atari ST kind of game. But again, if you look at footage of it, it holds up really, really well. Again, it captures all the gameplay mechanics, all the kind of platform, all the kind of combat. Everything from the bigger version just plays really, really well. Kind of honourable mention for one that was almost in there was Prince of Persia. Again,
yeah,
cracking port again. So, I mean, the Game Gear definitely had... It didn't have a lot of titles compared to the Game Boy, but it had a lot of quality titles. And it was, again, maybe doing games that, given the hardware, and given the limitations of the display itself, although it could do more colours, you've talked about the resolution, it was doing games that were on far bigger, more expensive hardware. In the home.
It really was, mate. The only thing that's really comparable to it, I think, is the PSP. And I remember those times when you'd see versions of console games coming out around the 360 and PS3 era, when you'd get a version of a game on 360 and PS3, and then you'd get a PSP version, which was kind of downscaled to play on a portable, but they were still impressive. And that's very much what the Game Gear was, I think, because there are so many ports. And I mean, you look at Mortal Kombat 2, you know, that came out 1993 in the arcade. The arcade hardware was so ahead of its time. It was so, you know, it's cutting edge, really. I mean, the Mega Drive, there's a lot of cuts to make it fit on the Mega Drive. And the SNES version is a good port, but again, lots of cuts there to make it right, to make it authentic. The fact that they managed to scale it down and get it to play so well on a Game Gear, it's just, you know, great coding. But I think Probe did it. So they weren't geniuses. They weren't geniuses by any means, which just, I think it just shows how capable the hardware really was.
I mean, I've literally just put on that video of Mortal Kombat 2, and like, the animations are quite kind of choppy, but the character models are absolutely superb.
They're nice and big and chunky, aren't they?
Aye, they're big and chunky and colourful, and they're brilliant representations of like the Mega Drive version or the arcade version. Honestly, it's... Again, maybe the characters are moving at maybe a few frames a second. It's, again, you compare it to today, it's not anywhere near comparable. But again, much like we spoke about in the Daytona episode,
yeah,
it's like you've got to look at it and think what the hell that was running on and what it was trying to emulate in terms of the arcade technology at that time.
100%, mate. Yeah, I was just thinking exactly the same thing. It's very, very much like Daytona. And I know from what I've seen, it is choppy. I think it just runs at 30 frames per second, which is not bad. I mean, Virtua Fighter 1 ran at 30 frames per second. It just looks a little choppier on Game Gear because it's half frame rate for Mortal Kombat compared to what you're used to.
Yep.
So yeah, I think it's, you know, it's making cuts in the right places, and I think they nailed it with that one.
Oh, definitely.
Superb, mate. That's a brilliant list of games there. Not too much overlap with my own by the looks of things.
No, I mean, usually we kind of have a bit of a crossover with one or two, but I think your five are, I think there might only be one in there that kind of crosses over.
One obvious one. So I'm going to go. So I'm going to go from five to one. So number five is Castle of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse. Absolutely loved that game. Originally played it on the Master System. It's one that I think, again, it's a port of a Mega Drive game, but I think it's actually better than the Mega Drive game. I think that the levels are better designed. I think the gameplay is snappier. I think that it's just a lot more cheerful, a lot more accessible. It's just a lot more fun. Sometimes find the Mega Drive game is a classic. No, don't get me wrong, but sometimes I find it a little bit of a chore. Yeah. It's a little bit long, whereas the Master System game and the Game Gear game just feels so snappy and fresh and just, it's just a joy to play. It was the first game I completed on my Game Gear when I bought it last year, which is, I think, shows how much I love it.
Blowing.
Number four, I've got Fantasy Zone.
Mm.
That's me mentioning the opera in the opening. Uh-huh, uh-huh. It's funny, that old little thing being Sega's mascot for a while. Everyone forgets that. It was Sega's mascot before Alex Kidd.
Aye. And again, a cracking wee game.
It is a very good port on the Game Gear. Again, fantastic. It's one that I tend to pick up all the time. It's one I got very early on when I picked up the Game Gear. I think I picked it up from CEX for like £6 or something. Took it home. I was just like, oh, this is a cracking little port. It's a superb little cute 'em up. I think it's the phrase that people like to use for them now. Little shmup, where you go into the shop, purchase upgrades, and love the level design because they all loop around rather than being a straight line. You can fly back and forth. Classic game. Absolutely superb. Number three is Streets of Rage. Very, very good port from the Mega Drive game. Obviously, some cuts needed to be made. Unlike two other ports from the Mega Drive on this list, I wouldn't say it's better than the Mega Drive game. it's definitely the lesser version, but that's not to take away how good it is. And as far as beat 'em ups go, I think that's the best one on the system by a mile. So I don't think there's much competition on there.
No, I mean, again, I didn't know there was a Streets of Rage port for the Game Gear until years later. Like, I had no idea that it existed at all on Game Gear. So it's one that I've went and kind of checked out footage of. And again, it's ridiculous to think you're getting Streets of Rage on a handheld at that time.
Yeah, it's got two player mode as well, because there's the 8-bit version of Streets of Rage, but I think the Master System and Game Gear versions are quite different. And it's the Game Gear has only got Axel and Blaze as playable characters, but it does have the two-player mode, which is really impressive. I think you'd need two Game Gears, a link cable, two copies of the game, 12 batteries.
The days of link cables.
Oh, I've still got some for various consoles tucked away. every dad's got a box of wires.
Yes, aye. The wife tells you, "Hey, you're never going to use them. I might one day." Don't mess with a man's box of wires.
One day I will use that Game Boy Advance to GameCube adapter to get to my Chao Garden on Sonic Adventure. I will.
Honest,
yeah. But yeah, Streets of Rage, absolutely superb game. They actually ported Streets of Rage 2, but I've never played it.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
I'm not sure if that port's as good as the first one, because obviously on Mega Drive it's a lot more ambitious. I know on Master System it's a bit unresponsive. It hasn't got the best reputation. But I can't remember how it fares on the Game Gear. I wouldn't mind picking it up, but the sequel's a little bit more expensive, unfortunately. Number two is Shinobi. A brilliant game. One of Mr. Sega Lord X's favourite games. He's made a couple of videos. Mm-hmm. Well, he did a review of it, didn't he, and the sequel. It's absolutely superb. Another one that I didn't play till late. It's absolutely superb version of Shinobi. Completely its own thing. Really enjoy playing it. And number one, which should be no surprise to anyone, anyone listened to the Sonic 30th Anniversary podcast, is Sonic the Hedgehog on the Game Gear. Which is, that's the one where we cross over, mate. So it's just, as we said on the Sonic episode, that was my introduction to Sonic, albeit I'd played the Master System version and your introduction to Sonic. So...
I just put on Streets of Rage 2 for the Game Gear on YouTube. This is ridiculously good.
Is it? I've not looked at it for a while.
Mate, see, it's pixely, but like it totally faithfully recreates the game. I'm literally watching it. It's like, this is outstanding, and it moves at a fair pace.
That's decent, mate. I might have to look into getting it, but...
Mate. That looks great fun. Like... All the different enemy types are there. You can do the suplex move. He's just picked up a pipe and scudded a guy across the jaw with it. That's honestly, I'll send you a link. Check that out. That is outstanding.
I've got no budget for games. Don't tempt me.
Buy it, you fool. You fool of a toque.
Throw yourself in next time. Rid us of your stupidity.
And then the wife comes home, "You shall not pass!"
Yeah, I really shouldn't, mate. I'll have a look at the video, but yeah.
I've just sent you on WhatsApp, mate, so I'm just going to make you part with some cash.
Oh, God, what cash? But yeah, Sonic the Hedgehog is number one. I think we discussed it long enough on the Sonic 30th episode, so no surprises there. I think it's better than the Mega Drive. I think the Master System's version is better than the Mega Drive. The Game Gear one is still exceptional. Some minor changes due to the screen size and stuff, but nothing that ruins it compared to Sonic the Hedgehog 2 on the Game Gear or Sonic Chaos, which are both good games, but frustrating. Honourable mentions from me, Chuck Rock, which I say was one of the first games my sister played. Very good port of the game. Is that one you played as well?
I played it on the Amiga. I loved that, the title screen. They're sitting there playing the instruments.
Yeah, it's a little rock group. Yeah, fantastic. Gary Gritter steals your girlfriend.
Moving on.
Yeah, well, it's a bit too old for him, really, isn't it? Anyway.
Jesus Christ.
Again, we're sorry about the time when we're playing the radio thing. We shall quickly move on. I know I'll get a lot of pushback for this, but Strider 2 on the Game Gear, some people label it as the worst thing ever made because it's heresy to have this sequel that wasn't made by Capcom. But I really liked it. I really enjoyed Strider 2. I don't know why. It's one that I played probably the second most behind Sonic on my sister's Game Gear. Yeah, made by US Gold, completely original.
Don't say the words US Gold to me, mate. Honestly, their name is Mud.
Oh, yeah, but how many games did you pick up for the Specky that said, screenshots may differ to what you see on the back of the box?
Mate, US Gold just means Street Fighter 2 on the Amiga, and I'm not going to mention the 4-disc drive Tower of Power that I know Resident SD, every time I mention it, goes, I'm always impressed by that 3 external floppy disk drives. Honestly, no, US Gold, away and chase yourselves.
Yeah, they're synonymous with crap, but yeah, I didn't mind Strider 2. One I need to pick up a lot, again, for myself. That is one I need to get. Another one, Space Harrier. Really enjoy that one. Mm-hmm. Very different to the arcade, actually. All the sprites are different. It's a little odd. But yeah, I mean, I could go on for ages. But Batman Returns, another one. Brilliant soundtrack by Yuzo Koshiro. Cup of tea for me, who we had on the show recently. He played it on the Master System again. The Game Gear version is the same as the Master System, just exceptional. And you got to shout out Columns, haven't you? I mean,
mate, it's just that was on that. I think every Game Gear owner at some point had the 4-in-1 cartridge.
Oh, God, the 4-in-1 cartridge as well. We were talking about that the other day, weren't we?
Columns, the Wii Rally game, the penalty shootout, and tennis.
I mean, that penalty shootout was pretty addictive.
It was, aye. It was really, really good fun. You get the wee box that would come up and you would pick your direction you wanted it to go in. Aye?
Yeah, I think any Game Gear owner ends up with Columns, Sonic, and that 4-in-1 pack, even though Columns is kind of on the 4-in-1 pack.
Aye. You've got it twice.
Yeah. Any of those you pick up for buttons, but you normally end up with them in a bundle with other games. That's why I've got two Columns, as I think it was in there with Batman and something else, and Space Harrier and something else. So I was like, oh, fine, I'll have another copy of Columns just to get hold of these for fairly cheap.
The most purchased Game Gear game ever.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that kind of brings us to the end of the episode then, mate. But yeah, 30 years, what a console. But yeah, makes me feel old now. I remember my sister getting it.
Like everything else, as we said at the start of the show, mate, these anniversaries are coming thick and fast now, and the numbers just keep on getting up.
Someone needs to make them stop.
Right.
Oh, dear. Well, I don't know about you, mate, but I think I might have a little cry now, have a little existential crisis, plug my Game Gear in, and play a little to celebrate its 30th birthday.
I'll just watch some YouTube videos of games and think of, as Jim Bowen would have said on Bullseye, let's take a look at what you could have won. If you hadn't sold your Game Gear for 15 quid.
Well, people sell them for parts, mate. Maybe snap one up one day.
Aye, never know. Might find some other idiot like me.
Oh, maybe one of our listeners can help. So we'll put it to you guys. We hope you've enjoyed the episode. If you can help James out with a Game Gear, if you want to share your own Game Gear memories, please do. Please get in touch. We're on Twitter. James is at the Segaholic. I'm at Swooper_D. You can catch us both at Sega Guys. Until next time, stay retro and stay Sega.
Cheers, guys.